The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Dueling Reviews, a show where two guys sit down with one comic and who knows what's going to happen. Although I'm going to bet that I'm always right and Matthew's always wrong. This is Dueling Reviews.
You're wrong.
No, Matthew is over there. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
This week we dive into an Image comic, a number one issue from, who is this? This is Anthony Johnston, Justin Greenwood with Shari Chunkahama and Ed Brinson on art or helping out with art.
Oh, Steven.
What?
And you mock me.
I do all the time, every chance I can.
Matthew's going to butcher your name. It's Shari Chunkahama.
That's what I said.
Or actually probably Chunkahama.
That's what I said.
That is nothing like what you said.
Yeah.
Special thanks to Chris Adams, who at one point was Stone Cold Steve Austin's tag team partner.
Really?
Yeah, the gentleman Chris Adams.
No, wow. How about that? So here we go. Space. The final frontier, but apparently it is far enough into the future where an orbiting space station, the Fuse, what does it says? Yeah, the Fuse. There was something around in that inside front cover where it's got some wording underneath the title of the issue, and it just says cover globe Apollo 17 moon mission 1972. I thought maybe it had something to do with...
The Fuse.
Defining what the Fuse is, when it went up, kind of the time period that we're looking at, because this is set at some point in the future, somewhat dystopian future where people can come and party on this orbiting space station, basically an orbiting country, and they can go there to party or they can go there to live.
Mm-hmm. If you wish to apply for residency, follow the orange line.
What's this guy's name? Dieter?
Dieter.
Yeah,
I am Dieter. Dietrich, actually, I believe.
Yeah, Dietrich. That's right. Dietrich is a newly arrived.
Now's the time on Sprockets when we dance.
A new resident of the Fuse. And turns out he's a police detective.
He is. And the way that we discover that is actually kind of cute. He's sitting in his flight up and the lady next to him is like, yeah, I'm running away for some bad debts. How about you? I am a police officer. And the look on her face is so well drawn.
Yeah, yeah.
You can see the utter dismay on this poor woman's face, realizing she just admitted to a police officer that she is a criminal.
Yeah. Yep. So Dietrich.
Mein Namen und Herren, wir werden in 5 Minuten docken. My German is awful.
Yes, it is.
Der Entfentingroom.
Dietrich isn't even 30 minutes off the shuttle. When some dead body lands in front of him, and that's where he meets up with his Russian partner.
Well, and the best part is his Russian partner comes in and starts to take control of what looks to be a murder scene. And he steps in and tells her to let the professionals work. And
right.
Kind of whatever you say, man.
And later he's like, oh, I didn't think my partner was going to be so old because she is an older woman. And her comeback is, I thought my partner would be old enough to be out of high school.
And are we to think that she's albino? Because
I just think it could be, but I just think she's old. Okay. That she's been up there for a long time. I mean, we come to find out that these two, as they're investigating the murder of a cabler, basically a homeless person up on the Fuse, that they are the only two that work an 8-hour shift for the entire Fuse, because that is how underfunded police and understaffed the police force is, at least for homicide detectives.
Yeah. And there's some interesting, you know, back and forth between them. I think Roger Ebert would refer to this as a onesie. One's a cop. One's
yeah. An so elf, you know. This is the really cool part, because as you read this, I'm thinking, man, this sure feels like I'm too old for this stuff, or this is my last day for retirement. And here's the new young rookie, and we're putting it in space, and we're doing all these futuristic things, and there's some mystery going on. Well, and so
Law
if you
and order
go back
the upper ionosphere,
here you go. When you go back in and read the fuse box, the letters column for this, the first one is from Anthony Johnston, who is the writer of this. He says the fuse is what happens when you take a British kid raised on Judge Dredd and Sherlock Holmes and fuse him with Miami Vice as a teenager, throw in a dash of Alien and Star Wars, then sit him down in front of a TV and make him watch Homicide, Law and Order, The Wire, The Killing, The Bridge, and God knows how many more shows beginning with a definite article. Look, what I'm trying to say is The Fuse is a big mashup of things I effing love. Detective stories, dirty lived-in sci-fi, American cop shows, and comics.
You can feel Blade Runner in here. Mm-hmm. You can feel bits and pieces of like your CSIs and your NCISs and your LMNOPs. You can definitely feel a heavy metal magazine influence,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
To both the writing and the art.
Well, that was the comment that's the comment that you made, is that this felt like a heavy metal magazine story.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that part of the reason that it feels that way is that in a lot of ways in the year 2014, Image Comics is where you go for those heavy metal type stories. I mean,
yeah.
The weird experimental stuff, the sci-fi, the adult themes, the adult sex criminals, all of that, what you and I in 1987 would have to sneak off down to try and buy an issue of Heavy Metal for, are now coming out from one of the big four, which I think is pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, you've got a white older woman, a black younger man teamed up together, and a new cop in a strange location. So we get to explore the world through his eyes. And we also have a little bit of a guide along with us to kind of move us along. Mm-hmm. And I think still they're going to have some rubbing of elbows, some bumping of heads.
There is a very literal Chekhov's gun in play, in that Dietrich actually has requested a service revolver.
Right, right.
And I am aware of the dangers of projectile weapons in a pressurized environment.
I think
in
they
my head,
do a great
he talks like Tom Lennon.
I know, but they do the such clubs. A great job in, you know, at first just drop in the occasional German word. But then as you really read, when you know that he was stationed in Germany and he volunteered to come up to the station, you really start to realize that the writing of his voice is very clipped, like it you would expect a German speaking English would sound. Yeah.
But they do not use like a Gambit Rogue phonetic accent, which I much love.
Right.
But once you started seeing him throwing in, at one point he gives a Mein Gott, I think, and he gives somebody a Bitte, and I'm like, you can hear his accent in the way the scripting is done, which I think is wonderful. They very subtly build it into where about halfway through the issue, I realized I was hearing his accent quite clearly. But more importantly, it wasn't super obvious, beat me over the head with it. And it wasn't something that I started the issue with, but it came in so gradually that it's like I was meeting a new person and going, I wonder where that accent is from.
And we find out that that his partner, and I forget what her name is, she's Russian.
Clementine Ristovich.
She's a Russian, but she has a really good English accent.
She does. He's like, you speak like you're American. You will, too, after a couple of years on the fuse.
Right, right.
I like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wasn't expecting this. Honestly, I didn't know what to expect because I know we talked about it last week and we said, yeah, let's give it a go. And then I literally picked it up about an hour ago, read it through Comixology, and then we sat down and recorded. So this was new. I had no idea what to expect, and I don't hate it. I do like it when we can break out of books that are just not superheroes and pow smash 'em ups. I do like these movies, or I'm sorry, not movies. I do like these comic books that take a different approach to telling a story. And I do like the crime drama. I do like the Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips books that dive into that area. This is a little bit different because you're mixing the crime drama with hardcore sci-fi. And I don't think Brubaker's ever done that in his crime books.
Well, and I can't think of anything, but I mean, the sci-fi crime book or the sci-fi crime story is, you know, we're talking Alfred Bester, 1954.
Right.
There are a lot of really great ones out there. But
oh, yeah.
This feels really kind of this feels fresh somehow,
mm-hmm.
even though we're dealing with, you know, we're dealing with two genres that have a lot of wear and tear around the edges. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, well, at least in this first chapter, like, it feels fresh.
Right. I do like the fact that it's a dystopian future that doesn't take all of its cues from an existing dystopian future.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like this is the dystopian future from Die Hard or the dystopian future from RoboCop or the dystopian future from Legion Lost. This is something that has familiar elements, bits and pieces of things. You could go, okay, maybe there's their Die Hard moment. But you get to a point where, you know, when they're talking, for instance, about the Cablers.
Right.
Throughout the issue, Cabler is a word that gets thrown around. And finally, near the end, Heinrich is like, I do not understand what a Cabler is. You and as she starts to explain it.
You'll have homeless on your Germany.
But the best part is, as she starts to explain it, we find another body.
Right.
We, you know, we're into next issue.
So yeah. Also a Cabler.
I think there's something more going on with Cablers than just this is a homeless guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if there isn't something specifically really weird going on.
So what do you think is going to happen next? Do you think it's going to be a hijacking of the station by a group of terrorists that are really after all the gold in the bottom of the mine? Or do you think that this is going to be one of those the Cablers are around and seeing what we're doing as we're trying to steal something else? I know that there's a heist in this somehow. There's got to be a heist or drugs. Although, speaking of Chekhov's gun, when you're making references to things and then not using them. Yes, we see him pick up that gun and make a point of saying, I have a loaded projectile weapon. But then they also follow that up by saying, I also understand that you have a gun smuggling problem on this station.
Ooh, important thing to know.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm kind of hoping that we're going to get kind of an NCIS murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Something where, you know, we're going to have to go through and he's going to be writing the mystery in the detective story.
I hope so, too. But knowing what that bit that I read from his Fusebox letter column, where he said he grew up on Miami Vice and Lethal Weapon and Judge Dredd and all those things, you're going to have a big chase fight scene at some point in this book. And I don't know if this is a miniseries or if it's ongoing. But I'm going to imagine by the time we hit the third act, there's going to be some stuff hitting the fan.
The
and then at the end of this, somebody pops out and says, Dietrich, get your ass to Mars.
As we say in my country, liebe Schlangen Schickelschatz. Never mind. But I'm cautiously hopeful that this is going to be, you know, another saga.
Yeah,
it could another be sex criminal, something where I go, oh my gosh,
mm-hmm.
you know, what's going on here? Lately, mm-hmm. I've had a lot of new books pop up and just hit my radar, and none of them have guys in tights, and it's kind of freaking me out.
I've been away from guys in tights comics for quite a while now, probably about 2 years. I mean, I still read.
That's only because they put Batman in ridiculous armor. In 2011.
I'll still read Batman, but I'm basically behind on everything Batman. But I don't really pick up a lot of the capes and tights stuff. And we've talked about that multiple times here because I find myself drawn to a lot of the stuff that Image puts out, a lot of the stuff that Dark Horse and Dynamite put out. And I realize Dynamite does the pulp heroes, but they're not quite superheroes. I mean, The Shadow has a supernatural element. Doc Savage has a supernatural element to it, but they're not guys in tights jumping in, you know, leaping tall buildings in a single bound kind of things. And I like these kind of stories. It's a different way to tell stories. And it is refreshing. And I'm hopeful that people will, even if they're a big Wolverine fan like you are, Matthew, I hope that they do take the time to say, hey, I can step away from this kind of superhero story and go and read and appreciate these other things from other publishers.
Yeah. You know, I love Wolverine the way a hen loves a flag, the way a fish loves a bicycle. And more importantly, I love Wolverine the way that Steven loves not being mean to me. So
I do love not being mean to you. It's just too bad I can never do that.
Exactly.
It's just too bad I can never do that.
That's exactly it. And, you know, if it weren't for the stupid retro review that I did a couple of months ago, I could honestly tell you I haven't read a Wolverine comic in years.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you live, you learn.
Yep. What do you think of the art in this book?
cautiously optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
It's stylized, but it's not like ridiculously stylized. It kind of reminds me of Chew, of all things.
A little bit. That's what I was going to say. A little. Everybody's kind of thin, right? Drawn a little bit thin. But then it's like some weird angular things when they're moving. And I don't know if it's the choice of, you know, quote unquote, camera placement. But it just seems like everything's kind of shot with a wide angle lens so that when people are moving, they're a little bit more stretched out than they normally would be.
That's definitely a thing. And I mean, there's a cinematic influence. Dietrich and Clem are both angular characters, especially facially. He has a big, giant, craggy nose like Triple H.
Right.
And she has, you know, sharp features
on her chin, especially.
Yeah, you could use her to cut glass. She's like an elderly Reese Witherspoon with white hair. But yeah, I'm kind of liking it because of the backgrounds and the detail.
Mm-hmm.
The coloring is muted, and it feels like everything is taking place inside a mini mall, which I think really works for the expectation that we are on an enclosed station.
Right. And we said dystopian quite a bit, and I don't know. That may be somewhat of a mistake. I mean, we are seeing a space station with limited resources, but still has a huge amount of traffic that comes through. Because if you look in that opening pages when Dietrich docks at the station and they said, hey, if you're here for pleasure, follow, you know, the blue line. Yeah. If you're here to do residency, follow the orange line. If you're already a resident, follow the green line. And they kind of do a shot where you see all three of the lines, and the pleasure line is by far the longest line of everyone at the station. And then
kind
you counter
an Atlantic
that
city vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you counter that with an overcrowded space. So we do get that mall feeling because everything's on levels. We do get a casino type vibe. But because I think we're dealing with dead homeless people and we're looking at the gritty side of this metropolis. I mean, they go so far as one point saying that the city has decided not to put security cameras anywhere that's not a tourist attraction. And so that makes you kind of, I guess the closest thing that I would equate this to is the Fifth Element. The landscape and the workings of the Fifth Element.
And I would say the Fifth Element is still kind of dystopian, but
I guess
there's an I don't want to say urban, because urban has a different sort of feel, but it's something that's very metropolitan and very, you know, Fritz Lang's metropolitan in a lot of ways. I don't know. You may be right that dystopia is a little too sharp.
Because to me, dystopia means a rundown, depressing future. And that's not what I see in this.
This is kind of the underbelly of what may be a shiny, happy, rich people Star Trek future.
Yeah.
These are the people who don't get to play all the big reindeer games.
Equivalent would be if you've ever been to Disneyland or Disney World and you've taken the underground tunnels and you've seen the underbelly there, you know, it's quite a bit of different world. And it kind of feels like that. So
you can find the disassembled presidents under the Hall of Presidents.
No, not quite. But you do get to see the characters without people in them. And that's kind of creepy.
I actually found a website that it was abandoned Disney.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they would go through abandoned areas, and they would go through parts of the park that nobody uses anymore. God, it's creepy.
I worked at Disney for a while. Creepy. And so I've been down in the tunnel. So, I mean, that's how you get from, and especially in Disneyland, how you get from one end of the park to the other, or Disney World, because you've got the different themes and you don't want to have a space ranger walking through Fantasyland or through, you know, Main Street USA. So you have to take these tunnel systems, and they pop out in a lot of different places. And, you know, there's this whole cafeteria. I mean, for me, it was your changing room, your locker rooms, your cafeteria, your lounge rooms, your mechanical rooms, your character changing rooms, all these things are all laid out under there. It's a fascinating. I know at some point they were selling tours, so you can pay something like $600 to go get a tour of Underground Disney. And it's a fascinating tour to go on, but it also takes a lot of the magic out of what makes Disney World, Disneyland work.
Yeah, Epcot
Center to a point, except that Epcot is a little bit different because they don't have an underground system per se, but it's still kind of creepy.
I have that same thing at my job, in that if you park in one of the parking structures, there's actually an underground tunnel from my area to the parking structure. to where the people who don't need to be seen by the rank and file can right. enter and exit. But it's fascinating and it's weird because you get under there and it feels like the year 1919 or something.
It does. It feels like you are in THX 1138 or if you've ever you know how the space station is the in 2001 A Space Odyssey, this big wheel and hub spoke system. That's kind of how – and again, this has been 20 plus years since I worked at Disney. That's how it was when I was there. Where you just kind of walk gravity. Through the air. Yeah, zero gravity and robots trying to kill you. Yep.
Yeah, yep. That is exactly. It's just like Westworld.
That's what, that's what this book is missing. You know, with all the sci-fi elements that we're seeing, you don't have robots in the fuse. We don't. We haven't seen an automaton of any kind.
Yet. Well, and, you know, it depends on your future. When you look at this future, it is essentially very similar technologically speaking and day to day walking around to what you and I are seeing right now.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You, at one point you see a kid who has clearly taken a chunk of board and nailed wheels to it and made a skateboard out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You see people with little Bluetooth earpieces and headsets and you see,
I mean, you see
technology.
Yeah. This is like a weird future because even when Dietrich arrives, he's in a phone booth talking on a telephone. So again, if you take the 80s and cop dramas and crime dramas and you mix it with Miami Vice and Judge Dredd, that's what you're getting here. He describes this world exactly in that letters column. And I find it fascinating that he nails everything and everything that he describes, he nails in the book and the book nails that time period if it were mixed mashed together.
And if you follow the backgrounds and the little signs, there's one point they're just walking past a takoyaki stand. then you see a payday loan.
Attention to that. I guess I didn't pay attention to that.
All these wonderful things.
Takoyaki. That's gotta be fascinating.
Takoyaki is awesome. And, you know, as you're walking through the bits and pieces of the little city or the, I don't know if it's a city or if it's a settlement or whatever you want to call it on the thing, you get all of the just the swirling around characters and people with funny hats and weird things and piercings in their face. And, you know, it feels like what's the line? The not too distant future.
Yes, exactly. Like 20 minutes into the future.
That's exactly what this is.
I saw a creepy picture of Max Headroom behind the scenes today where it was Fred Dreyer. What was his name? Was it Fred Dreyer or was it Matt Frewer?
Fred Dreyer was Hunter.
Yeah. So Matt Frewer wearing the plastic top and then the makeup on his head. And then from basically breast level down, just, you know, not wearing a shirt. And it was really bizarre to see that.
Oh, that's creepy.
Yeah.
And you want to be really creeped out.
No.
Look up the Max Headroom interruption of the public television in Massachusetts in like 1980 something. Some guy broke into public television broadcasts and broadcast himself talking.
Oh, like Max Headroom? No, that's crazy.
Oh, it's creepy.
You think people
around the same time as the Captain Midnight incident?
I know a lot of our age people would remember Max Headroom and A-Team and all that kind of stuff. And I think younger generations will know A-Team because of Nick. What was the Nick channel that showed all old reruns and everything?
TV Land.
Oh, TV Land. Yeah. Nick at Night. But I wonder, do people remember Max Headroom?
Max Headroom did four episodes on ABC in like 1983.
But it was a pretty big deal. I mean, remember, I mean, in Back to the Future.
Who remember him are going to remember him as a cult thing. And because somebody wore a Max Headroom mask when they broke into PBS thing. But there are people who remember Max Headroom. But Max Headroom is the equivalent of what's a good weird reference?
Judge Dredd.
I would say Judge Dredd may have a slightly higher profile because of the Stallone movie.
Oh, sure, sure. And of course, the more recent one as well. But I mean, when you're trying to describe it to people, I think that's the closest thing that you can describe it as.
I would say yes. And tonally,
truly a dystopian future.
Oh, God, yes. And we need more dystopia.
Do you? Do you think so? Because it seems like every sci-fi book has to be set in a dystopian future where everything, the economy is depressed, the people are depressed, there's no hope out there. I don't understand that. I, you know, when you look at 2001, A Space Odyssey, That was not a dystopian future. That was a future that was full and bright and had all this potential.
That was the future of the 60s.
True.
The future of the 50s was bright and shiny with rocket ships. The future of the 60s was bright and shiny with just the slightest hint of corruption around the edges.
Mm-hmm.
The future of the 70s was bright and shiny with corruption behind everything. And if you so much as bumped into the wall, you'd realize that, you know, it was life day and you were going to be sent into
the fields.
But by the 80s, everything was corrupt and there was no brightness to be
had. I wonder if that was because of the fear of nuclear war. If that was the biggest impact on that, because suddenly we know that the nukes are going to go off and now we're going to have to live in this apocalyptic landscape and we're going to be fighting over gasoline or water, and only a crazy man can save us.
A madman, if you will. Yeah, and I think that's definitely, but there's also been an expectation as that time passed that people have started to realize that, you know, the old expectation of keeping up with the Joneses and the nice people who do this and that, those don't really exist.
Well, but do you think we're going to bounce back from our storytelling settings where even today we watch an alien movie and it's still set in that dystopian future? You know, we watch what's another sci-fi that's just recently come out?
This is the end.
Well, yeah, this is the end. I mean, that one's a little bit different.
Right now, science fiction, at least in terms of most of the movie speculative fiction that I see, is based on the literal end of the world, Armageddon.
Right, right.
And I think that that is a natural extension of dystopia. I think it's going to have to come back around to bright, shiny Tom Corbett, Legion of Superheroes futures. But the problem with that is, as with anything, it's easier and in some ways more satisfying to deal with those type of things very ironically.
Well, but
to go, oh yeah, and I'm going to wear this Mickey Mouse Club t-shirt and, you know, but if anybody questions me, I'm still dark and cool under the surface. And I think that that's definitely an issue. But I do believe that speculative fiction is due for a bout of bright and shiny, hopeful futures.
Well, and the only reason I say that is it's just because, yes, in the 80s when you and I were growing up, I mean, I don't know how you were, but after seeing The Day After, and of course before.
Night of the Comet ruined me.
Well, it was The Day After because I lived really close to Lawrence. Wasn't that the name of the movie?
Yeah. The one where they nuke Lawrence.
Yeah, where they nuke Lawrence. And so I just grew up from basically age 10 or 9 through 18 until the wall came down, worrying that any moment there was going to be a nuke and we were all going to be dead. And so, you know, I have a very, mental grudge against the 80s for doing that to me, you know, for putting me through that fear. And I'm sure there were a lot of people who went through that fear that it was going to be a comet, asteroid, nukes, whatever. I think nukes were probably the biggest thing, especially if you watched Red Dawn.
Yep. Red Dawn. And I mean, if you look
at
all.
But if you think about future, though, but if you think about fiction, you think about it's fantasy and it's escapism. So why would we write about the things that are bringing us all down? Why would we not write about the things that are hopeful and exciting? And hey, in the future, it's all going to be, you know, ice pirates. Which I guess is somewhat dystopian future, too. But
it is extremely dystopian. What?
Yeah, but they had hooker bots.
I think
that talk like Joan Rivers.
I think it's the Rod Serling principle, because Rod and, you know, Gene Roddenberry did this as well. And God love him, Sherwood Schwartz could do this, where you would tell a story that was a science fiction tale or a weird Twilight Zone-y tale or even something as silly as the seven castaways stuck on that island. And you use that to address larger concerns within the framework of your fiction.
Sure. But I mean, Star Trek was really hopeful. Star Trek was a bright, shiny future that would talk about these topics and issues.
I agree. And I think when you get down to it, even when you had the dark side of that bright and shiny future, like the episode with Bella and Loki, and, you know, they were a little bit overt with the metaphor in the checkerboard people.
Right.
But they were trying to say something and trying to keep it relatable to today's world. And sure. I think a dystopian future is basically our way of kind of whistling in the dark and saying, what's the worst that could happen to our society? Let's tell a story about what happens in that situation.
Yeah.
And how, you know, how does the spirit of man hold up? How can we do something good, or how can we make it a cautionary tale where, oh, it's not fair. There was time now. Mm-hmm. There was time.
Time enough at last. Yeah. Thankfully, the fuse isn't that way, though. I mean, I don't feel a huge depression settling on everything. It's just
not yet.
Here's a place. Well, yeah, because we haven't really explored the world. We don't know.
And there's.
Who put the fuse up? Why it exists?
Been murders in the space of 5 hours.
Well, true. But we don't know what makes this world tick yet.
We really don't know a lot about the station itself.
Right. That's what I'm saying. We don't know who put it up, why it's there. Was it put up specifically for pleasure? Was it a expansion of the, you know, the space station from the our time period?
I do hope that. I think the age difference will do this for us, but I do hope that Clem and Heinrich don't get into a romantic relationship, because I really dislike.
I don't think they will, honestly.
I hope not. I don't know that it would fit with the tone that he's describing and showing us, but you never know. I mean, people wanted to put Scott Pilgrim together with knives.
Yeah, what's wrong with that? She's hot.
I will destroy you. Do you understand what you have done?
There comes a point, though, when you can tell a story that isn't about romance. And I think that maybe we should start doing that.
Yeah.
I feel like there's, you know, you don't have a story with like Crockett and Tubbs anymore. Sonny, well,
except for that remake of Tubbs. Miami
that
Vice.
That was terrible. Terrible. Don't watch that.
No, but
Crockett and Tubbs
it.
Were two guys who loved each other and occasionally expressed that I love you, man. I love you really.
Yeah, in a man bro way, yeah.
Yeah, in a bro man way. And that works, and that's the center of that series. But you know, I'll bet you even money when they made that movie, they wanted to turn one of them into a girl so they could do a romantic
thing
with it.
Because there's that huge scene where the one of the other cops, I think she's a cop or maybe she's involved with the drug lord. She and Crockett get it on in the, I mean, what am I talking about? I don't know anything about that movie.
That's right. We don't watch remakes.
Why would we watch crap like that? Although 21 Jump Street was pretty funny.
You're telling me the adventures of Superbad and Magic Mike.
Magic Mike was also a pretty good movie, too. I guess they're making a sequel to Magic Mike.
I've heard that. Yeah. Kevin Nash is hoping to get in that one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, he's only 53, I think. 53 or 54.
Who was it in the first one? Was it him?
Kevin Nash was the big guy.
Okay. I knew there was a wrestler. I just couldn't remember his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty good in that. I liked him.
They called him Big Daddy Cool back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's 6'7".
So my bottom line for Fuse number one, I enjoyed it. I liked it. I like the story that's setting up. I like the crime drama. I'm sure there's probably plenty of plot holes if somebody wanted to nitpick on this. But I'm not going to nitpick. I'm going to enjoy this like I did most of my entertainment of the 80s. I'm just going to sit back and let it feed through and let it pour over me and enjoy it for what it is. And I like the art. I think the art is fine. It's a very unique style. The coloring's good, too. I'm liking the story so far, and I'm liking the setting. So for me, it's a thumbs up. I recommend picking up The Fuse this week from Image Comics. What about you?
I do, too. And I think that the things that I like about it are the things that are vaguely familiar while not feeling incredibly super familiar. Mm-hmm. There's bits and pieces in here that you can go, okay, we're getting into the Lethal Weapon. We're getting into our Die Hard. We're getting... You know, but it's bumping up against those and it's using them as reference points, but it's not.
Oh, it's not,
you know,
mocking or ripping them.
Station.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yet.
It's not like Star Wars with an albino and a German guy. It is interesting and I'm hoping that it goes really good places. But yeah, I'm in for at least 6 based on the strength of this issue. This is good.
Do we know if this is a limited?
I do not, but I expect out of Image.
Usually is, though, isn't it?
Anything that comes out of Image usually has a 6-issue guarantee that they'll commission a season, for lack of a better phrase. And then if it really sells, like Saga was a 6-issue series, but when it started really taking off, they, you know, took it from there and they went forward.
It doesn't say anything in the inside front cover about this, so I'm guessing, I don't know. We'll see. Just part 1, issue 1, part 1. We'll see how far it goes.
Part 1. issue one.
All right. Looking ahead to next week, looking ahead to February 19th, 2014, we've got a number of books coming out. Dark Horse Comics has BPRD Hell on Earth number 116, Conan the Barbarian number 25, Dark Horse Presents number 33, Skyman number 2. I'm going to skip that one.
Skyman.
White Suits number 1. No idea what that's about. Terminator, Enemy of My Enemy, number 1, comes out as well.
Ooh.
Enemy of My Enemy wants to leave.
The Enemy of My Enemy is also Eddie Murphy.
DC Comics has the 28 issues. Animal Man, number 28. Batman chopper. And Two-Face, number 28. Batwoman, number 28. Birds of Prey. Who else is a 28? Justice League, Supergirl, and Wonder Woman, all 28 issues
is
next
that,
week.
Is that the Supergirl issue where she starts vomiting blood and becomes a Red Lantern?
You know, she does turn into a Red Lantern at some point. I don't know if that's already happened or when that comes
Supergirl
out.
28?
If that is the case, we can pencil it in. But if she's not going to turn into the Red Lantern in this issue, I don't care about it.
Well, I don't know that we'll care if we don't. Let me look and see if Supergirl 28 is vomiting blood.
Okay. That would have been the cover. So IDW Publishing next week has Ben 10 number 4. I guess there's a new Ben 10 series coming out this weekend.
Yes.
Ben 10 Monsters.
Vomit Blood in Supergirl 28.
All right. We'll read that then.
All right.
We have Godzilla Rulers of the Earth number 9, Jericho season 4 number 5. Your wife will pick that one up.
Actually, no. She was kind of like, season 3 was awfully slow.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's not the same without your actors.
You think? Even with the lookalikes?
I do. And I've said this before. It's
you didn't
not
like Buffy?
I didn't say I didn't like Buffy, but it's not the same without my actors.
Mm. Okay.
Without Sarah Michelle Buffy and that one, the stunt double
Charisma,
has with the larger dress.
Charisma Carpenter.
Because there's a point where, you know, they have a different stunt woman for Buffy.
Still in love with her.
And she gets into arguments and she's like, I'm going to fight now. And I'm like, uh-oh, Buffy's got her fighting boobs on. Because you know how Sarah Michelle Gellar is all skinny?
Yeah.
Her stunt double is not.
A little bit beefier, muscular. Yeah.
No. She's a little bit more...
bustier.
Zaftig.
Image Comics. Image Comics next week. A Voice in the Dark, number 4. Alex and Ada, number 4. The Krampus, number 3. Apparently, I guess Kevin Smith is putting Clerks 3 on hold yet again, so he can move forward with another scheme that he has called Enter the Krampus or something like that, or Here Comes the Krampus.
I have stomach Krampus.
Yeah, boy. Or Krumpus. I don't know which the
Krumpets.
Yes.
You got to know what a crumpet is to play.
Morning Glory's number 37 out next week. Peter Panzer Faust number 17. I'm sure Zach will be into that.
Uh-huh.
Savage Dragon 193. Undertow number 1.
Undertow.
No idea what that's about either. Over on Marvel Comics.
It's about what happens when you get something stuck at the very tip of your shoe.
Mm.
And it's Undertow.
Ah.
And it sucks.
Yeah. Yes, an Undertow does suck. All new Marvel Now .1 number 1. Second printing for that. I like, was it Chris or was it, who's the one that put up the all new super maybe not so great She-Hulk Now? Who
the
was
all,
that? Was
the
that Chris?
All new now probably canceled by the time I get to the end of this She-Hulk number 1. Yeah.
Was that Chris? That was pretty good.
That was Chris.
Black Widow number 1, and that's all inside baseball listeners. Black Widow number 1, second printing there with the Noto cover, the Phil Noto cover. Captain America number 17. Daredevil number 36. Dexter Down Under number 1.
Dexter.
I know.
Edie, we're going to Australia. Stop touching things in my lab.
Iron Man Annual number 1. Marvel Knights Hulk number 3.
It's pronounced Knigget.
New Warriors number 1. Knight of the Living Deadpool number 3. Nova number 13. Yes. New Warriors, come out and play. I think I lost Matthew. Punisher number 2, Savage Wolverine number 15, Ultimate Comics X-Men by Brian Wood, trade paperback volume 3, Uncanny X-Men number 17 and X-Men number 11. That's the all-new Marvel Now. Under our comics and graphic novels, there's Matthew's back. Joiners in 3D hardcover. I don't know what that is. Adventure Time number 25. Afterlife with Archie number 3, second printing. Ooh, I saw the teaser for issue 4. We put it up on the site this week. Archie's holding a bat. Scary? Archie's holding a bat, and the under message says, "Don't make me do this."
Is it scary?
It looks scary. I can't wait to read it. I was hoping they'd sent me the advanced copy of it. But Archie Comics, come on, guys. We've been promoting
Dear
this.
Dear Francesco Francavilla.
You need to send me all 27 issues of Afterlife with Archie right now.
And also Batman 73.
Yes, and also Batman 73. It's actually 72, I think.
Well, it'll go 12 issues then. It'll be 70.
There you go. Let's see. Warlord of Mars, number 33, the Risqué cover comes out next week.
That's one of those dynamic forces.
Yeah, yeah. Holy crap. They have a Dynamic Forces Spider-Man number one Lee signed edition for $196.20.
Stan Lee or Jim Lee?
No, I don't know. It just says Lee signed edition.
Oh, Gimli from Lord of the Rings.
They're only at them orcs. Extinction Parade number five, Grim Fairy Tales, Wonderland Asylum number two, God is Dead number seven.
How many colons are in that title?
It doesn't.
Grim
it doesn't
Fairy
have
Tales,
any.
Colon Wonderland, colon Asylum.
I don't think they put colons in any of that stuff because even if you look at all
colons.
even if you look at all new Marvel Now point one, number one, second printing.
Number one.
No colons in that.
Well, Marvel can't pronunciate.
Curse number two.
Their punctuation is not good.
I think I said Extinction Parade, God is Dead, Judge, graphic novel number three, Midas Flesh number one, second printing there. Pandora Hearts, graphic novel, Quantum and Woody number eight, Red Sonja number seven, RoboCop Memento Mori one shot.
Drop it. Great.
Simpsons Comics number 209, Shadow Master Series, Trade Paperback Volume 1. Trying to look for really expensive things this, Victorian's Secret Winter Wonder Catalog One-Shot, $3.99.
What?
Victorian's Secret Winter Wonder Catalog One-Shot.
Winter Wonder
Have you not read the Victorian's Secret, what is it, like the Secret, the hell is it called?
Basically, is that the girls with the steampunk underwear?
Yes.
Aye.
But I also think next week, well, I guess it doesn't. I thought Legendary from Bill Willingham came out next week. But I guess
wait for it.
Dairy. Maybe it came out this week.
And I hope you're not lactose intolerant.
My weeks are all messed up.
Yeah, it happens.
So it looks like Legendary Supergirl number 28. Week. Yeah, looks like Supergirl 28 next week for us.
Supergirl will vomit blood.
Do I have to know what's going on in the Supergirl universe to know what's going on? I'm not going to go back and read 28 issues.
I haven't read a Supergirl issue since 14 or 15.
First week one. Didn't we cover all the week ones?
We did. And I covered Supergirl number zero, I think. We did all the 0 weeks, too. Because we're Major Spoilers.
Yes, we are. And we need to cover more things over at MajorSpoilers.com. You can head over there and you can check out all the reviews. You can check out the growing news, including who will be playing Harvey Bullock in the upcoming Fox series Gotham. You can also check out news about our new live show for February for the VIP members coming up this Sunday, February 16th, 1:30 p.m. Hope you can join us if you're a VIP member.
That they would freak out.
Tom Corbett issue out this week, Matthew.
Did I tell you what I sold on the internet?
Tom Corbett, Space Cadet, Danger in Deep Space number two. What did you sell on the internet last week? Oh, a lot of people liked our discussion last week of those back issues.
We got actually a part of that same lot.
Yes.
We got a run of Tom Corbett, and it started with the really, I think it was either Fox Features or one of the other fly-by-night publishers from the 50s, did three issues of Tom Corbett, and then it went over to Dell Comics for like seven issues.
Yeah.
We had all of them. A complete run, and I believe
I graded
them in 4.0 to 6.0 condition.
Mm-hmm.
Some gorgeous painted covers. We put those on the eBay, and somebody snapped those up with a quickness.
What do those go for, something like that in a 4.0?
Dollars.
How many dollars?
Well,
you don't have to say what the price is. You can give me a range. Give me a range of about $100 either side.
I would say for the lot, if you were to price them out, grade them individually and say each one is on sale for what Overstreet would say.
Yeah,
you'd be shy of four digits, but only just.
Really? For individual issues?
From 1954, 1956.
So a single issue is a four digit book.
Oh, no. I meant the whole lot.
Oh, the whole collection is a four digit book. OK.
Each of them was running in the 20 to 40, I think.
That's not bad.
we did pretty well. We got them, I think, for a dollar a piece when we purchased the lot. But it was one of those things where it was a massive lot of comics.
I know. I saw the picture on the tweeter.
Yeah, it averages out. We actually have more than that now. The boss keeps buying new books and putting them into stacks and thinking I don't notice. he literally does this. And I'll be like, Chris, he's like, I can neither confirm nor deny the existence of more comics in the stacks.
So, you know, what was it, like 10 years ago, 7 years ago when Major Spoiler started?
Mm-hmm.
The current owners weren't owning your shop at that time, right? It was a different ownership.
The current owners took over in 2008,
yeah.
I want to say.
So, but back in like 2006 when Major Spoiler started.
Yes, I was
comic industry in the
different ownership.
Yeah, the Gatekeeper was not doing as well, I thought. That was my just observation.
It was a different sort of thing.
Right. But now, yes, it seems like the comic shop is turning around, and I wonder if that's the case for a lot of other comic book shop owners, if business is turning around and if things are good times. I mean, here you guys are selling, you're buying stuff for, you know, literally a fraction of the cost of what you're turning around and selling it, maybe 1/100th of the cost.
Well, and it's also a question of there is a thing that you get into when you are a collector and an owner, is that you will buy things that you love with the expectation that other people will love them as well. And I think specifically Dion is very good at divorcing his love with what he knows is going to be a good risk reward.
Well, that's why I was wondering, because that's a big risk, because, you know, I could say, oh, we're going to just buy all these Batman things because I love Batman. But then nobody's buying Batman stuff, and that could be a bad business choice. So it sounds like they're able to separate that.
We were buying you remember when Dynamite was doing the Red Sonias, where you'd buy you would like eight covers and
then you get one of the covers cover.
One and a half. Yeah, giant covers. We were buying lots of Red Sonia to get those covers and to sell those covers at premium prices.
Right.
But then we had lots of unsold Red Sonia. So what it really came down to was you really have to divorce yourself from what you like and look at what's actually selling.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I think to some degree they've done really well in branching out from that. But one of the buyers, God love them, he enabled everyone who runs the counter to buy and gave them a budget and handed me a stack of treasury sized Marvel and DC.
Wow.
From 76 and 77. Superman versus Muhammad Ali. The Amazing Spider-Man.
But what do you mean it gives you a budget to buy things? Meaning that you can buy stuff from the store, or that you have the budget to,
if someone comes in
to sell stuff, you have the authority to buy that.
For the longest time, if you wanted to sell, you had to come see Dion on Saturday from noon to 5.
Okay.
At this point in time, if someone walks in the door and says, I would like to sell you some things, Christopher and Barbie and Jim and Brandon and the kids who run the front have the authority to say, yes, I would like to purchase said things. I almost never run the counter.
Yeah.
But if it came to comics and a buy come through, I mean, I am officially authorized. But I would never be at the counter because I've got too much stuff to do back in my little cave because everybody's authorized to buy.
Yeah, yeah.
The last 3 months, I've gotten 4 sets of Batman Year One.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, and a complete run of A Death in the Family.
Ooh.
Including the one where the Joker kills the ambassador to Iran and beats him. Yeah, with a crowbar.
I may be interested in that one. I got to go back and look because that may be the one that I am missing.
420.
I think that's the one I'm missing. My collection is so in such disarray, but I remember originally I couldn't find that issue. I could find everything preceding and after.
Some of the books go dead array.
Yeah, they certainly do here at Major Spoilers HQ. Hey, remind me, put a note there in the
note
system where you put in Supergirl. Remind me to ask you about Barbie next week. Because there's a thing that happened this week hitting the Intard webs that I think we can talk about. Next week in addition. Some people are liking some of these side conversations. I think we have something we could talk about next week. Or maybe we'll bring it up on the Major Spoilers Podcast, one of the other fine shows in the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. How are we able to do all the shows like Major Spoilers and Dueling Reviews and Zach on Film and Top 5 and Munchkin Land and Critical Hit? How are we able to do that? Because of the fine support.
Volume.
No, it's all because of the support of our listeners, man. These people are awesome. You guys are awesome. You guys do all of these great things, whether it becoming a member of the VIP over at members.majorspoilers.com, whether you are signing up for our email list, whether you're clicking on the ads, and we're going to start having some more ads on the Major Spoilers site to help support us, or even just going over to Major Spoilers and clicking on that Amazon.com button and buying something, a little bit comes back our way. Every little bit that you guys do helps us churn out content. I was talking with someone tonight. I was finishing up my, and I know you're going to laugh, Matthew. I was finishing up my Star Wars class. Thank you. And I was talking every with somebody time. And he was, well, every Wednesday is the Star Wars class. And we were finishing up the, discussion. We were talking we're afterwards. He's like,
88201.
and he was just saying, how do you guys churn out so much content? It's just like, we just do it. And we're trying to find ways of doing more content. I mean, if you follow them, if you were signed up for the Major Spoilers email list and you got that free bonus tracks episode, you already know that there's another podcast coming out. You already know that there's something else that we're working on behind the scenes. You already know that we're working on trying to produce great original content just for our VIP members. We can't do any of that stuff without the help of our fine, fantastic listeners. You guys sitting at home.
Faithful Spoilerites.
Well, whether you're sitting at home listening to us on the couch while you're reading your comics or watching your kids run around, or if you're on the bus or the train or the plane or the automobile on your way to and from work.
Would you? Could you with a fox?
no, but I could with a box. Anyway, no matter what you guys are doing, you guys are giving us the power to create more content. And that's all I want to do. I want to be a 24-hour creation machine, and I think Matthew wants to do that. I think everybody at Major Spoilers just wants
actually,
to generate great content.
Actually, I
want
to be an 18-hour creation machine and then a six-hour lie-down-and-sleep machine.
I'm okay with that. I'll authorize that.
I'm old and fat.
I will authorize that.
Yes.
How about that? Wouldn't you guys love to see? Here's the thing. The more people we get to sign up at the Major Spoilers VIP, the members.majorspoilers.com, $5, $10, whatever that you can do. Not only do you get some great bonus content over there, including our monthly live chats, bonus tracks episodes, that kind of stuff. You work to where we get closer to where we can make Matthew do a hero history every other week.
I know.
We get to that point where Rodrigo can sit down and write more magic articles and more critical hit articles. We get to the point where I can crank out more podcasts and interact with you. We have the ability to bring in more people to make Major Spoilers grow even better. It's you guys. We do it all for you. Somebody asked the other day, well, do you do it for money? No, it's not for money. Not for me. Are you doing it for ego? Meaning, are you doing it for internet fame? And for me, it's not that. It's because I enjoy sharing information and entertaining those of you at home.
Yeah, we like to show off.
I don't think it's showing off. I think it's just let's entertain. Let's, you know, here's the new philosophy.
Yes.
For Major Spoilers, we follow the 3E system. We entertain, right? Hopefully we make you laugh. We, you know, you get something pleasure out of listening to the shows or reading the articles or whatever. So we entertain, we educate. That's the second E. Yeah. You learn about things that are coming up. You learn about comic book grading like tonight. You listen to our shows and you become educated. You can go out and have conversations with people. And then number three, it's empowerment. We want to empower you to go out and do great things. People have listened to our podcasts and they're empowered to go out and do their own podcasts. We empower people to become DMs for the very first time because of Critical Hit. We empower people to make smart decisions on what movies they want to see or where they should go to sell their comic books. That's our philosophy. Three E's: entertain, educate, and empower. And I hope we do that. And I hope we can continue to do that for a long time to come. And I think we can with fine, faithful Spoilerites like you listening right now.
I think we left out edamame. Because I could go for some sushi.
I think our sushi place is closed. It's really? Kind of late. 10:30, I think they close around 10.
Oh, I thought you meant closed.
No. That place.
You guys roll up the streets.
No. That place, it's going strong. I didn't think it was going to last, but holy crap.
If I'm willing to drive into the city proper, I can probably get Chinese food for another 3 hours.
But, yeah, that's a big difference between big city and here that I hate. You know, people are always like, well, how can you stand moving to Hayes? And basically it was like, as long as I have a fast internet pipe, the mountain will come to Muhammad kind of thing. I can get anything that I want. But sure. Living here for almost 15 years now, there are things that I can't get. I can't go to the, I can't turn off this podcast right now and go see a movie Wednesday night.
You can't do it in a movie theater.
No, I can. When I lived in California, if it's a Wednesday night and I want to go see a 10:30 showing, I could go do that without a problem. If I wanted to go grab some fast food Chinese, or if I wanted to go grab some sushi, or if I wanted to go do a good burger place, I could do that. I can't do that here.
Welcome to Good Burger.
If I wanted to go to a Toys R Us, I could go do it. Can't do that here. We don't have Toys R Us. Don't have a Target.
Our Toys Ain't Cheap closes at 9. I think the Target closes at 9 or 9:30.
I thought that was a 24-hour Target.
The Walmarts are 24 hours. Maybe our
I'm pretty sure that Target's 24-hour. Ooh, you got a Super Target? Oh, I love the Super Target. They sell sushi at the Super Target. Target,
but they're a Target with a grocery store. I don't think they have enough floor space to be Super Target, but it's hard to say. I try to avoid the Walmarts and the Super Targets and the Hypermarts of the world.
Yeah.
What I do is I drive up to the door and I send the wife in because I don't want to deal with it. Because
you want to just sit right outside the door with the engine running and the door open and your ski mask over your face.
She comes running out, exactly. Now, when I go in those places, there's never a comfortable place to sit.
I'll take these Huggies and whatever you have.
I'm not a stand up and walk around for a long period of time kind of guy. Yeah, I'm old. But more importantly, I used to work in a call center, so 80% of the people in the Walmarts and the Targets, and strangely enough, the Mexican restaurants of Topeka used to work for me, and I can never be sure they're not spitting on my food.
Yeah, yeah. No, I understand
that.
So
I don't want any part of that.
Listeners, if you would like to provide us some feedback, there are a couple of ways you can do that. You can send us an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com. Yep. I love reading the emails. We read every email that comes through, even if we're not able to respond to every email. And even if we're not able to respond to, or if I'm not able to respond to an email right away, at some point you'll get a response, even if it's 6-8 months later.
December of 2016.
You can contact us in the comments section if you like what you're hearing. And I know the last two episodes have gone way longer than what we normally do with dueling reviews. But here's the thing. Wednesday night, I'm wound up from Star Wars class. Oh, Matthew didn't laugh that time. So I haven't eaten anything all day, and then I have a little thing in a brown bottle. And I'm
thing in a brown bottle.
My mouth is lubricated a little bit more.
Oh, apple pan dowdy.
So you can use the comment section, let us know what you think of the show.
Steven's you can use little bottle the has three X's painted on the side.
And a skull too, so it's really good. You can head over to iTunes and you can leave a 5-star review. We'd love those 5-star reviews. True. Or you can hit us up on Twitter. Matthew, your Twitter is?
Mighty King Cobra. All one word. Cobra spelled with a C, not with a K. Some people try to spell it with a K, and I don't know why.
Matthew tried an interesting experiment that failed very quickly today. Communicating in only in Ashley pictures.
Yes. The reason it failed was I couldn't find the one where she was giving the viewer the finger so that I could tell you that we were done. But more importantly, I don't want to use them all because the Ashley of the day is still ongoing.
Yes, that's right. And you can follow me at Major Spoilers. And for all of us at Major Spoilers and Major Spoilers Entertainment LLC, have a great night. Have a great day. Have a great week wherever you are. Pick up some good comics and we'll be back next week to where I will once again prove that Matthew is wrong.
No, Steven is wrong.
No, I am right.
No, you're wrong.
No, I'm right.
You're wrong about that.
No, I'm absolutely right about that.
You say that, but you don't.
I say that because I'm right.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2014.